The following program is brought to you by Podcast One Sportsnet. Don't forget to download our new Podcast One app.
He is currently the head football coach of the University of Michigan Wolverines and a former player. His dad and brother are also former players and coaches, but there is more to them than just football. It's time to talk about attacking life each day with an enthusiasm unknown to mankind. This is Attack Each Day, the Harbaugh's Podcast with Jim Harbaugh.
Back on Attack Each Day, the Harbaugh's Podcast, episode number 32, and Coach Harbaugh is asking if we've had too much of him. Coach Jim is thinking that Coach Jack and I have heard enough.
And as you heard and Ira heard, my response was, more is more.
That's right.
We want more.
We want more. We are demanding more.
Demanding
Coach
more.
Jim
I
Harbaugh.
Like that.
And I don't. Where did we get off the rails having you think that we are disinterested?
It was a look. There was a look.
Body language?
There was a body language. There was a look. As I looked around at Ira and you and my dad, he kind of gave it.
How did you get me into you, Ira?
All I was saying was, if you've had enough of me on the podcast, just say you've had enough of me and I'll be okay with that.
It would go from the Harbaugh's podcast to the Harbaugh podcast. Maybe just be singular. I'm not quite interested.
More is more.
More is more. And we will dissect that in greater detail with John Jansen. I've got another awesome show today. A gentleman by the name of Kevin reached out to me. He said he named his truck Jack because it's tough, it has no bells and whistles, and it kicks ass.
Woo!
How do you like that?
Could he send along a picture of that? I'd like to get that in my basement, picture of that truck in my basement.
Sure, we could do that. Then a gentleman by the name of, who calls himself Flex Dixon on Apple Podcast, said his favorite has to be Coach Jack Harbaugh. He said, quote, geez, he's the best at telling stories. Keep the podcast coming.
Oh, thank you.
We'll take that.
What kind of truck did Kevin have? Maybe that's a – we can get a sponsor on the podcast.
It might be a big old Ford. I've driven in it once before. Kevin Lustig, embedded guest.
Is that
there?
The truck – I've seen a picture
– Ford F-150?
It's a big dog.
That's painted with the wings on the front of the truck.
No,
across.
That's not it. No, it's a white truck. But I mean, the one that you're talking about, you've seen it.
I've seen the picture, and in fact, sent a letter, great letter to Jim, and volunteered his truck for any kind of promos that we'd like to do with the football program. I mean, it is a slick truck. I'm telling you,
coming up with some good stuff.
Hard to imagine a better truck than the Ford F-150.
You're a proud owner, proud driver, right?
Yep. Yeah. I drive a Ford F-150. Every coach should drive a truck. You can put the balls, the helmets, the equipment back there in the
back.
You
did at USD,
too? You know who just recently, maybe 6 months ago, now drives a truck?
Who?
John.
John drives
John
a truck?
John Harbaugh.
Awesome. Every coach should drive a truck. I've always drove a truck.
And he came and visited and saw your truck and went out and got one. Just like it. Now, I'm not saying that he would ever admit that he might have gotten a truck because you had a truck, but it's a.
Is it purple? So you got a purple truck?
I believe it is.
Purple with some yellow?
It's a truck. I have no idea about F-95s or 65s. I don't have any idea, but it's a truck.
Trying to get ourselves a sponsor here, Ford F-150.
And we got a guy over there who might be able to help arrange that. So.
Jim Hackett.
Yeah, that's right.
Jim Hackett. The great Jim Hackett.
So we had our spring practice this past Saturday, had a lot of former players and families out and everything. Part of the best part for me is seeing the families, Coach. You enjoy having all the families in town?
Yeah, it was great. I was coaching the practice, but you couldn't help notice all the families watching intently as their sons were out there performing. And great to see a lot of our parents and families, brothers, sisters, grandparents. Of course, the Woods family came up, both grandparents this time. John Woods made the drive again. He comes to every game, and LaTanya Woods, everybody. It was great. There were so many. I think about every player seemed like they were represented with at least a few family members. What did you see, Dad?
It was a throwback for me to the 1970s picture day here at the University of Michigan. Coaches would come out in their coaching attire, and the players would come out in their game uniforms, and the press would be there and interview and all that. But for us, we look back now, some of the great pictures we have, family pictures we have with John and Joni and Jackie and myself and Jim were at those picture days. And I had a throwback to that on Saturday with parents, and so good of you, Jim. Pictures before practice.
Everybody got a picture.
Parents were out there, and the players were in their uniforms, and had a chance, and grandmothers and grandfathers, and taking those pictures. And then after, again, 2 or 3 hours, people were still here, you know, pictures and a barbecue, and parents getting to know other parents, and back and forth. And Jackie and I talked to several parents, and they're so proud that their sons are a part of this Michigan program, the academics and athletics. And the thing that I gleaned from that was how they talk about their sons' friends here on the team, and how they've had them in their homes, and they've had them out to eat, and how respectful they are, and how proud they are that their sons are a part of this great family.
It's just a meeting place. Everybody kind of congregated here, and they were able to share their stories, their memories, their passion and love for Michigan football. And Tariq Black's grandpa, Freddie, came up here, wanted to take a picture with you. You know, I saw Rosalind Peoples-Jones racing other moms down there on the field and emerging victorious,
really?
I might add.
Yeah,
I've got video proof. So it was just a great, fun atmosphere. And every parent I talked to, you know, we had Ed McCaffrey, and the McCaffreys here, and the Grodmans and the Pattersons, the Dwumfers, they were parents all over. And really, I mean, it was a little tight confines because we had it indoors, but they were all checking it out.
I think that made it neat.
Intimate.
It made it down on the sideline, and bodies flying to the boundaries, and the sweat. You actually see the sweat coming off your son's face.
You bring up a great point that really resonates with me. And the parents on our team, they treat their sons like their own sons, but they also treat the other players.
Right.
Like their own sons. And not one time since I've been here at Michigan has any parent ever complained about another player at their position. Like, why isn't my son playing? Yeah. Why is he playing over my son? They're both good. They've never, I haven't had any parent ever complain about if their son was getting playing time. And not once that it was, we were playing the wrong person, and think of about every ball team that every listener knows about if their own kids were playing on it. Is it really that way? Because I've coached other places, and I've had parents complain, "Why are you playing? Why aren't you playing my son? My son's not playing as much as and the person that they're playing ahead of them isn't as good as they are." You know what I'm saying?
But that does, when you're with the parents, they have so much respect. And then and then we'd be talking with a parent, and all at once a player would come over and hug, and they would talk as if, as you say, as if they have that bond and that relationship that you look for in your son's best friend.
And they're all invested in each other's success, right. And the rising tide is lifting all ships.
Yeah. And they take, you know, if one player doesn't have a parent that made it in, you know, showing up on the holidays, the Christmas holidays, the Thanksgiving holidays. I mean, you stand up and make that announcement. Anybody doesn't have a place to go for Thanksgiving or a holiday, you know, welcome to come over to my house and that kind of thing. And but they all
find a place.
They find a place, and it's usually with one of the other parents. I know Bobby Spate taking 15, 20 guys out to dinner. You know. On the Thanksgiving holiday, yeah. That kind of thing, or they get together, they potluck. It's pretty cool.
Absolutely, had just a lot of positivity, a lot of great times on Saturday. Saw Matt Lester there, the guy who's endowed our defensive coordinator position. He was stoked to be out there. His son Asa's got a little bit of a wrist injury, so he's not playing baseball. But Matt was happy to be out here, and always a Go Blue guy all the way. We saw Jeff Wilpon. He stopped by the building.
Their team's off to a hot start.
Yeah, I would say.
Last time I checked, they were 9-1. What are they now?
12-2.
Wow.
And I was watching Noah Syndergaard throw some devilish, nasty pitches. Struck out 11, I think it was, last night or the night before. But
Pittsburgh
really,
Pirates still hot?
They are. I think they've only lost 2 games. Indians aren't quite as up to that standard yet. But
long
I'm,
season.
I'm sure we're going to match that in the near future.
Well, a lot of winning being done from the Mets for sure. So just a tip of the cap to Jeff Wilpon. Wilpon family has their name on the baseball stadium here at the University of Michigan. So our baseball team is similarly hot. Jack, you came back from Baltimore. Takeaways from the
trip? It's my partner in the golf tournament.
That's right.
The Michigan football golf tournament.
I think he's going to bring even some sharper sticks to try and win the tournament this year. You guys lost by a stroke last year. Was that?
I think we came in tied for second or tied for third. It was one of the two. We got a small trophy.
I remember it being tied for second, and you guys,
Where is that trophy? Do you still have that somewhere, that trophy? That small trophy?
I've got the bobblehead doll right out there. I think it's
right out here. Yeah. It's right there. We keep all trophies.
Oh.
Celebrate all victories.
All certificates. Put them in a frame. Put it up on the wall. Says something nice about yourself.
Excel in school, be the best at sports, and win the most awards and trophies, right? I mean, that's kind of...
You got the right idea. I think you've been around me this long.
I don't think it was stated quite that way, but yeah. The intent was there.
It's close. Get the best grades,
uh-huh.
Win the most awards,
uh-huh.
And excel at sports.
Got it. Okay. Committed to memory.
And
that's got to go up
on the board.
At some
point, we should start advertising for our golf tournament, the Michigan football golf tournament.
Yeah, we've got the date picked out.
Great friend Steven Eisenberg will be
helping
again.
Yeah, absolutely.
Organizing.
Always a fun time for us.
What's the date on that?
July 30th, Monday.
At the Travis Point Golf Club?
Yeah, Travis Point Country Club, home of the Volvic Open, the LPGA event that's coming to town here, in June?
The next show, we're going to have to go into our format, too.
We have
a very unique format for the...
Maybe the best format ever, perhaps. So you will let you be the judge.
Team scramble, but then there's also an individual golfer of the
Mark Woods won
year.
It last year.
Mark Woods won it.
Yeah.
So you come to our tournament, you can get the scramble team format for 12 holes, and then we also have an individual Masters type of competition.
Meritocracy.
Before we get away from it, I'd like to go back. Ira is here with us.
You're too interested in that.
No, I want to, if I could... Ask Ira. He's right by the board here of quotes.
I thought that was more is more on the golf
I would
golf
like
talk.
If Ira would write down those three things on the board there. Jim, could you give them to Ira so he can get those on the board? There you go. He's got the pen now. Go ahead, Jim.
So
get the best grades, win the most awards, and excel at sports.
And we added some quotes to the quote board this past weekend. We had, if you have to say you are, you ain't. By Joe Lewis, and then I think it was the smartest person in the room.
You sign that, Ira. Sign that. There we go. Well done. Thank you.
And then the smartest person in the room is the one who realizes he or she isn't the smartest person in the room. So we had some people coming through. We're proud to add to the quote board. I don't know if they saw it on Amazon, but they were adding. They're valuable ads.
Yep.
We
should put up the Mike Tyson quote. Probably one of the best of all time.
Everybody has a plan
until they go ahead, JT.
Everybody has a plan until they get punched in the mouth, right? Yeah, that's
it's just about as good as it gets.
I'm supportive of that one.
And that is the truth. Have to show some love for Hims. ForHims.com/attack right now. You can get a trial month of Hims for just $5 today while supplies last. You can see the website for full details. It would cost hundreds if you went to the doctor or to a pharmacy, but right now, great deal. ForHims.com/attack. And the problem is that 66% of men lose their hair by age 35. How would you feel a year from now if you're getting a little thin, if hair's falling out? I would say, do you want a bald spot to pop up? Do you want to do something about it first? And the solution is ForHims.com. It is a one-stop shop for hair loss, skin care, overall wellness for men. No snake oil pills or anything like that. And I literally went and bought the gummies, 30 gummies in there for hair loss. It's preventative maintenance. So I'm taking one a day. I've now taken two. So I'm not off to a blistering start since having them for about 5 days. But got a bunch of biotin in there, some other vitamins and minerals to just try and help prevent you from losing your hair, and certainly comes highly recommended from me and from others. So, like you said, go to forhims.com/attack, and you can get a $5 promotion while supplies last. And really easy. You can answer a few quick questions, and a doctor can review and provide you with a prescription. So a lot of solutions there. Again, that's forhims.com. Here on Attack Each Day, the Harbaugh's podcast, and we are with national champion 10-year NFL vet, John Jansen. John, welcome.
Hey, thanks a lot for having me on. It's good. I listen to you guys all the time, so it's exciting to join you.
You know, they say good news travels fast and bad news travels faster. I know you had an opinion on somebody singing on the podcast last week.
Yeah, that was all good news, man. I tell you what, I I thought it was awesome that you could just pull that one out of your back pocket and be ready to roll. So, what job well done there, JT.
Thank you, Jack. Jack called on me. So
from a 0 to a 10, John, exactly where would you put him?
Oh boy, I tell you what, I'd give him about a 7.5, and I would give. What I would ask for, though, is that maybe Jack this week would step up and outdo you.
No way. That's not happening, John.
I like that. Well, for the record, a 7.5 is a C, an average in the scholastic grading system. So anyway, John, well, we'll get into your professional and collegiate accolades, but start by talking about your time as a tri-sport athlete at Clawson High School and how much you enjoyed playing other sports, baseball, basketball. I mean, what was that like for you?
Well, I was an active kid, and I liked competing. And anything that I could play, whatever the season was, if it was football, it was football season. Basketball season, same with baseball and track. And there was just a lot of opportunities. Clawson's a small town, so there weren't always a lot of kids out for all the sports. So everybody had an opportunity that came out to play, and I tried to make the most of mine and made a few runs in the playoffs in basketball. And for a while there, I thought I was going to be a basketball player, but relegated to the IM. But we did win the IM championship there at Michigan, so I got one of those newspapers on my wall as well.
Well, I find that a lot of football players think they're basketball players, I tried my hand at IM. Coach, did you play intramural basketball at all when you were at Michigan?
Yes, I did. Played high school basketball. I mean, a lot of football players were basketball players.
I think they aspire to, or maybe think they're better than they are. I see sometimes.
Well, they're actually playing basketball, so.
Sure. Okay.
Yeah. I don't know what you're trying to say.
I think that they all aspire to be.
Did you play basketball?
I was very bad, yeah.
Okay.
So maybe I'm just lumping myself in the category. John, you had mentioned that you went to Clawson High, and it was a smaller school. You could have gone to bigger schools, but you decided to stick it out there, and your dad kind of had a philosophy on that. That's what Jack was telling me. Will you care to expand on maybe why you didn't go to the bigger high schools?
Well, it was a little bit of what I mentioned before is, when I was playing football, we only had, 20, 24 kids on the team. And so you got a chance to play both ways. I was the tight end on offense and on defense, linebacker, defensive end, and I got to do the long snapping. And there just was a lot of opportunity to play. And same with basketball. I played, varsity basketball as a freshman and was able to play 4 years there and play with my brother, who was 2 years ahead of me. So being in a smaller school, you may not get the competition at practice or the competition – in regards to the amount of players that are competing for your spot, but you get a lot of reps because you're always on the field, you're always out there playing, and I just wanted to play. Whatever it was, I just wanted to be out there playing and having fun with my buddies.
And that's okay. That's a good thing, right? And playing varsity basketball makes you a basketball player.
Yeah.
And you enjoy playing basketball, you're allowed to play basketball.
Coach, when you're recruiting guys, I know obviously they're going to be on football and playing there at Michigan, but what weight do you put on guys that are multi-sport guys as opposed to just single sport athletes?
I love it, John. Love it for football, especially when an athlete also plays basketball at the high school level and wrestling. Wrestling's another one of my favorites. I mean, it really teaches the linemen to move low and quick, and linebackers, running backs that wrestle, always had a deep abiding respect for wrestlers. They work the hardest and they get the least amount of credit, and there's a real carryover for football. Noticing now that lacrosse, there's so many good athletic reps there that youngsters are getting. Soccer has always been a great sport to play as well for football, where you run and you have the eye-foot coordination, and basketball. I mean, it's you can see a guy compete. You can see him get thousands of athletic reps playing that sport. Unfortunately, it's less and less, John. And I'm noticing the competition between the coaches, especially the AAU coaches that want their guys – playing year-round basketball or year-round baseball or year-round football in seven tournaments, et cetera. Baseball, another great sport for hand-eye coordination. I mean, you love your receivers and defensive backs to have had some baseball in their background because they have to track the ball. So, Jack, I know it's a hot subject for you as well.
When I was coaching down at Western Kentucky University from 1989 to 2002, we put a high priority on multiple sport athletes. Jim mentioned defensive linemen and offensive linemen love to have them some wrestling in their background and some basketball in their background. And the one sport for the
track too.
And the great thing about
learn
that,
how
Jim,
to run, get a leg cycle, throw the discus.
Sometimes in coaching, we would get enamored with the guys that ran fast. You know, you're looking for that 100-meter and 200-meter type guy. I like the jumping guys. I like the high jump type guys and the long jump type guys that showed a skill other than just being able to run fast. There are track guys that attempt to play football that are fast, but if they're multiple in jumping and those types of skills, I think that adds to their toolbox, so to speak.
And the 400, I mean, there's a race you have to make a decision. Whether you're going to go your very hardest or whether you're going to ease off of it. And I mean, that's a man's race by anybody's account. And I like some of the distance guys too. I mean, they have great endurance. It's just, you see less and less of it, John. What have you noticed?
Well, I the same thing. And I think there's right now there's a big push for, you know, a lot of people to shy away from football just because of the concussions and basketball coaches, you know, baseball coaches are all using that to try and increase the numbers that they have in their sport. And, you know, I think good coaching prevents injuries. And if you've got a good high school coach and you've got a good, you know, position coach that teach you the right things, I don't see the injuries being a factor for kids not playing sports. But I love it when, and I hope my kids, as they grow older, they you know, I've got three daughters, and they play volleyball, they play basketball. I'm trying to get them into softball, and I want them to play everything that they can because not everybody gets to go on to play college sports or professional sports. We were very lucky in that regard. But when you look back at high school and you say, my best friends were always the guys that I played all the sports with because you're with them all the time. And it's not always about, there's a big part of it about competing and getting better at what you do. But in high school, it's about being with your buddy and having fun and staying out of trouble. And I love seeing kids play everything that they can and being involved in National Honor Society and all the sports that are possible that high schools offer now.
Tony Romo was an excellent golfer.
Yeah.
Steph Curry,
outstanding. I mean, they can get good at multiple skills. And but again, I'm not going to say any names here, but we did recruit a couple youngsters this year who were really good basketball players. One was an offensive lineman, and there was I've already heard one side of the story, but it appeared that the basketball and the football coach couldn't agree on they both wanted the youngster to either play football full-time only or play basketball full-time only. I think it was the basketball coach who said, you know, if you're not going to be out here for be able to make every single summer workout, then we don't want you on the team. It seems like you're cutting your nose off to spite your face. But I do know that the youngsters are having challenges playing multiple sports in high school these days.
John, this is Jack. Had a tremendous time on Saturday visiting with you and during the scrimmage and got some great insight into the game. But I really, really enjoyed talking to your dad. And the fact that both your mom and your dad were educators, your dad, I think, for 30-some years taught mm-hmm. in the same school, if I'm not mistaken. Tell me a little bit about them and their background and how you benefit by that.
Well, mom and dad, like you said, they were both educators. My dad taught middle school band at Larson Middle School in Troy, and he was they had built that building brand new when they hired my dad, and he was the only teacher that they had in that band room for 33 years. And Even yesterday when we were just out to dinner or lunch in Troy, and you know, he had so many students over so many years that it's almost impossible for us to go anywhere where a kid doesn't come up and go, "Hey, Mr. Jansen," and my brothers and I turn around like they were talking to us, and we ought to know better by now that they're talking to my dad. And, you know, and they tell stories about him as a band teacher and what he taught them and what he meant to them. And he was there for so long that he had kids of his students that he had in his first few years. So he taught a couple generations. And my mom was an elementary school teacher in Clawson there. And she took some time off when my brothers and I were young to help raise us and get us going in the right direction. And then when we were off to school, she went back to lower elementary, and they really instilled in us the what it means to be a parent, to make sacrifices for your kids, and to work together for a common goal. And for them, it was always, you know, my older brother went on to play basketball in college, and my younger brother was at Michigan for a little while and is in the mortgage business now. And we really learned our work ethic and what it meant to raise our own kids. And they're great grandparents now. You saw them on Saturday. There's nothing more important to them right now than the 8 grandkids that they have. And they love every minute of being around them.
How were they when you were playing and competing? They got involved, I'm sure. And were they able to give you some advice, or what were they able to do to inspire you?
Well, my parents, it was, you know, again, it's all about, you know, sacrificing for somebody else, and having, you know, myself and two brothers, and, you know, we were all 2 years apart. So it got to a point when we were in high school where, you know, they'd have us, one of us dropped off in Warren for baseball and the other one in Troy for basketball and the other one over here for soccer. You know, they're always trying to make all of our events. And, you know, I just remember that you could always look up in the stands, and whether it was my mom or my dad, somebody would be there cheering you on and supporting you, telling you that things were possible, and just giving you, you know, not the comfort, because as a high school kid, you don't always need the comfort. You don't need to see your parents, but the confidence that, you know, if something goes wrong, we'd get in the car and we'd be driving home, and my dad would talk through, "Hey, you know, why did you lose this game?" And it wasn't because of something the other team had done. It was because I either wasn't concentrating in baseball, I wasn't concentrating in basketball, I wasn't doing my job. And we kind of always broke things down as to what we could have done better to win, so that when we get to practice, we can work on those things. And when we get to the next game, we don't create the same mistake, and we try to do something different so we win that next game.
Love that. Some real profound insights there, John. Speaking of insights, you were at practice, like Jack said, this past Saturday. What'd you see from our team? What'd you like?
Oh, I love the way that they work, and you know, I love being able to see them on practice and working the script up and down the field, and you know, and you look at the young guys. Obviously, I watch the offensive line pretty close, and I'm looking at where they're putting their hands, where their, you know, head placement is, their footwork coming off the line of scrimmage, their first and second steps, their power steps, where they're making contact. And I really like what Coach Warner is doing with the group of guys, and really working on the fundamentals, trying to get those things right, because you can't do that. I mean, you can continue to improve during the football season, but it's so hard during the season to go back to, "Hey, you got to step with this one first. You got to put your hands here." That should be ingrained in those guys, and now you're working on schemes and blitz pickup. And I always love watching Don Brown's defense, because one of the things that I loved, especially in the NFL at the time I played, you know, there's always new blitzes. There's run blitzes, run dogs, all that stuff. And how can you scheme to pick up all the guys, or you leave the furthest guy unblocked? And I love when I see a new blitz from Don Brown. All of a sudden, in my mind, I'm thinking, okay, we could run this protection and dual read the guard, and we could pick this up this way and have the back do over here. And it's just a lot of fun to play the mental game. And, you know, my kids, they love coming to practice, and they were there on Saturday. And there's nothing better than watching my kids ask me about, you know, how come Kalik Hudson there was, you know, had a shot on Shea Patterson. Well, you know, we got to make sure that the guard gets out here and picks up this guy so that the tackle can pick up this guy. And they get into all that stuff. So it's a lot of fun.
That's awesome. Well, you're talking about, you know, the things that you're excited about seeing from our team this year, and hopefully we can achieve the highest heights like you did when you were a player here and co-captain of the 1997 National Championship team. What made that team great? What made that team special for you?
It was we had a lot of talent on that team, and, you know, people talk about Charles Woodson and the hyphen year that he had that year, the year that Brian Greasy had, and Glenn Steele and Sam Sworn and Ty Streets and all these guys. You got to have talent, and you got to have guys that can execute. But the thing that made that team special is we truly loved each other, and we wanted to succeed for the guy next to us. We wanted to succeed for everybody that had gone through winter workouts and summer conditioning and fall camp. And you were fighting for the guy next to you, and you were fighting for your coaches. Coach Carr and Coach DeBoer and Bobby Morrison and Greg Madison, all of those guys were a part of us, and not just guys that we saw in the meeting room or guys that we, you know, played with. They were our brothers. They were our family at that time. It was such a unique group. And when you win championships, you tend to stay in touch with those guys a little bit more than you do with some of your other teammates. And, that was obviously a very special year for us. And we've had reunions, and it's just been an amazing experience, not just in 97, but to see all of those guys go on to play in the pros and become doctors, lawyers, businessmen, and everything they've done.
Coach Jim, Coach Jack, how much pride did you take, given your time that you spent here at Michigan, you know, watching the 97 National Championship team? Jack, what'd you think? I mean, you coached here for the better part of 7 years.
Oh, having coached here in the 70s with Bo Schembechler, the thing that I saw in the 57 team and I see now with Jim being the head football coach here at Michigan and the people that surrounds the pro, I see that same the team type thing, mm-hmm. that John just described. It's so unique that it's able to carry over decade after decade after decade, and saw that so much in the 97 team, and now Greg Madison had coached with us at Western Michigan back in the 80s, and then back on the staff, and Bobby Morrison when he was a graduate assistant coming up, having been on the same staff with him. You connect. And Lloyd Carr replaced me here at the University of Michigan when I left in 79 to go to Stanford, so it's coaching and Michigan teams brings a smile to your face each and every time you think about it.
I was watching, flipping through the channels the other night, and Sports ESPN had they were doing a documentary on the 97 team. Maybe you've seen it, John, but it was amazing. 21 years ago, and seeing Lloyd, they interviewed Charles and Brian Greasy, and I didn't see the whole thing, but parade going. They had you guys had a parade. I mean, phenomenal. It just everything you talk about though really came through in that piece they did on the team.
Well, it was, and that's really what it was. And all of you guys have known this because you've been around different colleges and different pro teams. There's something special about Michigan, and there are a lot of times when I'd be sitting in the locker room when I was with the Redskins, and guys would come up and they'd want to know what it was like to wear the winged helmet, run out in front of 111,000 people. They wanted to know what it was like to play in Michigan because maybe they had that opportunity and they chose to go somewhere else, and it always kind of stuck in their mind because Michigan is different than everywhere else. There's a lot of great programs around the country, but Michigan, there's something special about being a part of the Michigan family, and it's not just a four-year commitment. It's a lifetime of a family of Michigan athletes and educators.
What do you remember from the national championship game itself? You guys, you pulled out a tight one there and were able to win, I think, 21-16, right? What do you remember from the game?
I tell you what, sometimes, I'll wake up in the middle of the night and I'm still thinking about, a set that I made that could have cost us the game because I let one of the guys inside me and got a little pressure on Brian Greasy. I still think about all of the different things of that game that I experienced personally. And then you step back and you see the whole game, and you see Ty Streets in the end zone and Charles making the interception and Jeremy Truman with his touchdown that he had. There was just so many things in that game. And what I really remember was when the clock finally hit zero at the end and you storm the field and you look around and it felt like it was you were floating on a cloud. It was a dream. And you see, look around and you see grown men, 21, 22-year-olds that you've gone far with, and they're rolling around on the ground. They're so happy that they can't believe it. They don't know what to do. And just that ultimate celebration that you accomplish something that is extremely rare. And then you get on the bus, and for me, I still had another year. You start thinking about things that you could do to improve this experience and do it again next year. And that's kind of, what you hope for Michigan is that, yeah, you're a part of history and you want to enjoy it. And it was great and it was fun, but you want to do it again. And you want to see, even if you're not on the team, you want to see those guys that you know are putting in all that work and that sweat and the coaches that you want to see them win another championship and have that same feeling that you had. You want to see those young guys do that as well.
John, did you ever go back and just look at it and look at the game from beginning to end as a player improving himself or someone just enjoying the experience of watching it?
Oh, sure. You go back and whenever I still do it now, and when I start the tape, I got to tell myself I'm just going to watch this and enjoy it.
Yeah.
As a fan,
yeah,
and just taking in everything that happened and watch the football a little bit and see everything that happened because you get so ingrained into watching you or your unit and picking up a blitz and you get mad because you didn't do something right. Sometimes you just got to sit down and say, okay, I'm going to watch this just for the joy of watching a football game, and I do that occasionally, and boy, it's a lot of fun.
Great point.
Well, John, if you had to go back and give, the 18-year-old version of yourself, the guy who's in college just starting out at Michigan, looking back on after all your experiences, what would you say to aspiring college football players or guys who are just starting their career here at the University of Michigan?
Work as hard as you possibly can because the amount of fun that you'll have by, being on the field and playing and contributing to your team and and contributing in practice. If you're a young guy and you're not going to be on the field, then you go as hard as you possibly can because what you do in practice shows on game day. If you're running on a demo squad and you're supposed to be pulling and doing something right, you better make sure you're doing it so that the defense gets the right look. And just whatever your role is at that time of your career, do it to your best of your ability because it's all about winning for Michigan.
Amen. Gosh, those are wise words. The thought just went into my mind. I mean, that's the best advice you could possibly give to a football player. I mean, take your coaching, what you're expected to do, and do it as hard as you can, all the time.
Well, you set the school record here for 50 consecutive starts at right tackle, and I think that's obviously a testament to your durability and a lot of respect for you just with numbing repetition starting every game every season. So
just back to John's.
Well, I was happy to see I was happy to see Mason Cole break that record last year, and there couldn't have been a better kid.
Yeah.
I think in my opinion to break that record, and I had a chance to see him just seconds before that game and just tell him how proud I was of everything that he had been through at Michigan, everything he'd worked through, changing positions and doing everything that he could to help Michigan win, whether it was playing left tackle, playing center, being a captain. And I was awful proud that when somebody was going to break that record, that it was going to be Mason Cole.
I was just going to go back to the original thing. I'd be remiss if I didn't talk about it, the playing multiple sports and how that affects your recruiting. It did this year. And Ronnie Bell is the main guy. He was he's an outstanding basketball player. I think John Beilein can determine whether Ronnie can help his basketball team or not. But we wanted Ronnie Bell for his football ability, but as much as what we saw on the basketball courts, and went to see Luke Schoonmaker play basketball. You know, at 6'6", he had put on 15 pounds. He was up to 240. Watching him run around the basketball floor, I was so excited about that. Hassan Haskins, who's a running back, was on his basketball team. And not a college player, Luke or Hassan, but you could see the explosion, and you just got more excited about him. And Jalen Mayfield was they were in the state tournament his junior year. Ryan Hayes played basketball. Can't think of so many anybody really on the defensive side, but you know, let's take a look. Let's take a look this year and see in the next couple of years and how Ronnie Bell develops and how much it does translate. You know, I'm so with you, John. I mean, just do as much as you can, compete it as much as you can. More is more. I've always felt that the more you do, the faster you get, the stronger you get, the better you get at your skill. And even had that debate with JT Rogan one time in 2007.
Legendary debate.
Legendary debate. Yeah. JT was trying to convince me that less was more. And I couldn't think of.
How about all those lessons you learned in competing and the competition side of things? You know, you just never want to get out of practice. You can always learn something about competition and winning.
Yeah.
Agreed. And thankfully, I had the great Tara Vanderveer.
We couldn't come
on
up with anything.
Side.
What is better? When is less more?
It just sometimes you're able to be a little bit fresher. You know,
a good word. Fresher is not a good word.
Fresh. It's not that kind of a game, JT. It's a hard, rough, tough game. Strong wins.
That's all I'm bringing to the table. Yeah. So, yeah, more is more. we got to trademark that, Coach. That's a good one.
The more you do, the stronger you get, the faster you get, the better you get.
Absolutely. Yep. Well, John, one thing I guess.
Which side of the argument are you on, Jack?
I'm fully supportive of you. More being better. Is that what it was?
More is more.
More is more.
Yes.
I'm totally supportive.
The counter to less is more.
And I really am really with John. Competition is what it's all about.
No doubt.
You're looking for those guys. If it's a Saturday morning, there's a foot of snow in the dead of winter, find those kids on the playground without a net, you know, maybe a metal steel net out there, guys that want to play and guys want to compete. Give me a bunch of them, and I'll guarantee you we'll be pretty good.
I'll give you the context of my lesson.
I mean, if you're a really good high school athlete, right? I mean, why wouldn't you be out – if you're a football player, why wouldn't you be out there on the basketball team? You're not good enough to make the basketball team?
Could be.
Or you're not competitive enough to want to be out there competing?
I stuck to baseball and got to be pretty good at that. So I did baseball and football and was begged to play basketball for about 10 minutes a game where I'd be on the press team with Coach Dillon at Coronado, but decided to try and get bigger because I was puny, barely big enough to play college football. So that was my story, and I'm sticking to it.
Yeah.
Could have done both. You could have done both. You could have lifted weights
and
practiced on the basketball
You're
team.
Right. You are absolutely
given them
right.
Giving them 10 minutes.
That's right. So – regret, living in regret. John, one thing before we let you go, you know, listening to you on the radio, just carrying the broadcasts, how difficult is it to have to work with Doug Karsh and really just shoulder the entire burden of that broadcast?
Oh, man, I tell you what, I love working with Doug, and obviously I love working with Jim and Dan. There's no two better guys to learn from and to get stories from Jim and Daniel. Jim's seen as much Michigan football probably as anybody alive right now. And Dan Deerdorf has talked more football probably than all of us combined. So, you know, I get a chance to learn from those guys. And Doug Karsh, you know, he's got some shady areas in his background. You know, he went to that school down the road.
Oh.
But we've saved him. We've accepted him. We've turned him. And I'll continue to work and make sure that he stays on the straight and narrow.
And do you envision your son Jack playing basketball at some point?
Absolutely. You know, basketball, football, baseball. I mean, we're getting ready for baseball season right now, and you know, we've got a bunch of snow up north, and I'm throwing a baseball practice. The nice thing about having baseball practice in snow is that the ball doesn't roll quite as far, so I don't have to go so far to get it. If it's stuck in the snow, I can always get there. So, we're playing catch in the house, you know, breaking lamps with the football, and I suppose it's about everything that you would expect from a 7-year-old. So we're enjoying every minute of it.
That's fantastic.
It's awesome. Well, appreciate you coming on with us, John, and looking forward to seeing you around here whenever you want. You know, obviously very proud of everything that you've done, and to have you as a Michigan man, couldn't be prouder.
Be sure to tell your dad that I said hello and how much I enjoyed our conversation.
I'll do that. He enjoyed every minute of it. I've heard a lot about it since then. And good luck next football season. Work hard. And, you know, all of us, no matter what year we played, we're going to be watching, we're going to be talking, we're going to be loving Michigan football, and we cannot wait to see our first win September 1 and celebrate 11 more after that. So go Blue.
Go Thank Blue. You. Hate to beat a dead horse here.
No, you don't.
Sounds like Jack is doing everything right, playing as many sports as he possibly can. There's always some sport or activity an aspiring athlete can do. Even if there's nothing organized, even if there's nobody else around, I mean, you can always go climb a tree. Great for balance.
Yeah.
One more athletic rep.
Exactly. And you had commented, Coach, on the power of doing one more thing, right? If you do everything that's expected of you, you will be better than those who don't do that, but you'll be on the level playing field of everybody who also does everything that's expected of them. You do one more thing, that's how you discern that extra advantage. That's how you gain the
ability to jump on everybody that's doing everything they should be doing. And one more thing than they're doing.
We've never told the milk story, I don't think, on the podcast. Can you do that real quick? John, I don't know if you've heard this before, but elementary school, the milk delivery?
Maybe we'll get that in the next one.
Okay. All right. We'll get it later. But he was doing one more thing, or at least one more carton of milk every day. So anyway, John, we digress. Thanks for coming on with us.
Thank you so much, John.
Thanks, John.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. We'll talk to you soon.
You bet. Showing some love to TrueCar. They've been supporting us basically since the beginning of our show, and I feel like I'm a TrueCar certified dealer just based on them being such proponents and advocates for finding fair and accurate pricing on new and used vehicles. I feel like it's easy to be an advocate for them and what they do, because a lot of what they do is what we do. Just try and advocate for people the best way possible, bring a lot of positivity, and they do that in the car business for sure. So the best way to know you're getting a great price is to do business with TrueCar and make sure that you're doing business with a TrueCar certified dealer in their dealer network. They can competitively price cars, make sure that they're getting you what you want, how you want it, exactly how you want it, with all the benefits, the features, the bells and whistles, if you so choose. And they give you pricing up front. It is a true price from TrueCar, all the fees and accessories up front. So before you even go to the dealership, TrueCar's got it all squared away for you. Exactly what you want. You can do it from your own home. So I know there's a lot of uncertainties in the car buying process. They sort it all out so you don't have to. Again, that's TrueCar, and go there for your new or used vehicle. Some features not available in all states, but that awesome pricing is available in all 50 states. I don't know how they get vehicles to Hawaii or Alaska, but that's a side note. So TrueCar, get your car from them. They are proud supporters of Attack Each Day, the Harbaugh's podcast, and we are fans and supporters of them.
Justin, and so good. Thousands of spring deals at your Nordstrom Rack store. Save big today on new arrivals from Kate Spade New York, Nike, Sam Edelman, Free People, and Madewell, starting at only $30. Great brands and great prices on dresses, denim, sandals, designer bags, and more. So rack your look and get first dibs on spring styles you want now from just $30 at your Nordstrom Rack store. What will you find?
Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit spectrum.com/bigdeal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.
New to Podcast One, The Producer's Guide with Todd Garner. Join Todd as he interviews the biggest names in Hollywood, like Adam Sandler.
We drove down there and my brother's like, do you have your material? I said, what do you mean?
Rebel Wilson.
I couldn't interact with these people, so I put on this American accent and pretended to be American.
And Isla Fisher.
I just wrote a passionate letter explaining how much I wanted to be a clown, begging them to accept me.
Download new episodes of The Producer's Guide with Todd Garner every Thursday on PodcastOne.com, the Podcast One app, or Apple Podcasts.
podcasts. This is Jack Talk.
I want to listen. I want to be better. I want to be the best I can be.
Welcome to our team. The team.
Jack Talk.
As you get older, you get to be 78 years old. Here's what I find. Hair grows in places that it hadn't been before.
Welcome to hashtag Jack Talk.
Time for the best part of the show, hashtag Jack Talk. And Jack, you've got some stories of Dwight Perry and Bo Schembechler together, two iconic coaches. You know, two of the best.
In my lifetime, those two are so very special. And over the weekend, I got to thinking of telling stories about Bo, and then we tell stories about Dort. There's a couple stories about two of them interacting with each other that I would like to share. When Bo was a senior in high school, Barberton High School, he was a baseball pitcher, a left-hander and a very, very good pitcher. Russ Nixon, who later played with the Yankees, was the catcher on his high school team. So very good. They went to the state championship in Columbus, Ohio. And in the first game of the state championship, they played Upper Arlington, coached by Dwight Perry. He was the football coach and the baseball coach. So he is the coach of Upper Arlington competing against Barberton. Bo not knowing Dwight, Dwight not knowing Bo. First game of the tournament, Dwight tells me the story in Bowling Green when Dwight was coaching or athletics director there, and Bo was coaching here in Michigan. He said, we played in the state championship game, and it was the first game we're playing Barberton. Of course, they weren't going to, you know, they normally in a tournament, you pitch your best pitcher in the opening game, but Bo wasn't pitching, inferring that he wasn't their best pitcher. And he talked about the game, tight game, at the bottom of the seventh inning, couple runners on, Upper Arlington has a couple runners on, and they signal to the bullpen to bring in the lefty, and that's Bo Schembechler coming in to get out of this jam. And he talks about him. He said Dwight was saying he didn't have a lot of speed, but he was a kind of a crafty guy, and he threw a little curveball, and my guy just kind of jammed it, line drive into center field, a rope through the middle of the infield, and one run comes in, another run comes in. They weren't put on base by Bo, but the game is over, and Upper Arlington wins the game. And I thought, wow. And then Dwight, I think, went on to win the state championship. So later, 5, 6, 7, 8 years later, I'm here coaching at the University of Michigan, and it took about 5 or 6 years, and I thought it was time to bring up the story about his pitching against Dwight in the state championship game. So I said, Bo, when you were a senior in high school, you played in the state championship against Dwight. Tell me about it. He goes, oh, yeah, let me tell you about it. First game, and then they were saving me. I was the ace of the staff, and they were saving me for the championship game, so I didn't start. We thought we could get by with our sub-best pitcher, and went into the seventh inning, and they realized that the only chance they had to win runners on base is to bring me in and throw my hard stuff. He said, I was a fireballing type guy, you know, speed, and maybe I could overpower these guys and get out of the inning. And I came in, and he said, it had to be up around 90, 91, 92 miles an hour that I was throwing. This guy was hitting like seventh or eighth in the lineup, and you know, and how those guys are sometimes. He said, I threw my best pitch on the outside corner. It was in a great spot and with great speed. And he said, the guy just kind of dinked the bat out. A little flare over the first baseman's head, and it rolls out in the outfield, and a couple runs score, and we lose. Very, very disappointing. But he said, I want you to know, went on to pitch at Miami of Ohio, I was an outstanding pitcher. So I didn't say anything, but went back to Dwight, and I was trying to get the two of them together to get that story kind of trying to focus on what might have happened. I never did, and regret that I never had a chance to pin them both down, but it did show pretty much the personality of the two individuals.
Well, I would say that there are three sides to every story, Jack.
There's somewhere in between. And just the last one, the quick story is this: 1969. I'm coaching at Bowling Green State University with Don Nealon, and Dwight Perry is our athletics director. Bo gets the job at Michigan. Down to the last game of the season, Ohio State and Michigan, and the Toledo Blade ran a poll each week with celebrities from around the area to pick the college games of the week. They had about 10 games that you pick, and Doit was on the committee, on the panel that would pick the games, and he took it very seriously. I mean, he'd call me into his office, and others too, I'm sure, and just, what do you think of this game? What do you think of that game? And he'd be taking notes. I mean, it wasn't just pick a game. I mean, he wanted to be right, and he was pretty much up on the top of the of all the people that were participating in the poll. And came to the Ohio State Michigan game in 1969. He calls me in. What do you think? I said, Doit, Ohio State team hadn't lost a game in 2 years. I mean, they are really, really good. And your son-in-law Dave McLean is the defensive line coach at Ohio State. And certainly, you know, you wouldn't want to pick Michigan over your son-in-law. So if I were you, I would pick Ohio State to win the game. He said, I think you're right. I think you're right. I'm gonna pick Ohio State. So that night, an article comes out in the Bowling Green Sentinel, I think it was, and it was a long story about Bo talking about the job at Michigan and playing Ohio State. And the question was, it must really be tough playing against your former coach, the guy that coached you in college, and having coached for Woody Hayes at Ohio State, it must be tough going against your mentor, the guy that taught you all of your football. And Bo went totally the opposite direction. He said, no, hold on a second. I learned a lot of football from Woody, but my true mentor, one of my real mentors in coaching football, is Doit Perry. Doit Perry was at Ohio State in 1951 when I went there as a graduate assistant. He hired me in 1955 as his first coach at Bowling Green. Much of my football, maybe the majority of my football, was learned from Doit Perry. He was a football coach. So the next day, before the game is played, I come in the office. It comes out in the blade that Doit has picked Ohio State. He calls me to the office. He goes, Jack, I've been giving this a lot of thought. That Schembechler guy really, really, really knows his football. I think he has a chance. I think he has a chance to upset Ohio State. And I thought to myself, he must have read the article.
No doubt.
And he didn't want to go against Bo.
I can understand that. That is comedy right there. The two of them just. A lot of respect, a lot of great coaching wisdom and knowledge there. We've got plenty of other stories too. Thankfully, we'll get a chance to save them for future Jack Talks. I would like to say that I've got a big family. I've got mom's side, dad's side, mom's adopted side, mom's birth side, and there's only one person who religiously listens to the podcast, and it's my fiance's uncle. Brent Copelitz down in New Orleans every Tuesday just downloads it. I've got to give him some special appreciation. I can't get my mom or dad or my sister or any immediate family members. Maybe it was called the Rogan's podcast, but I don't know. The fact that it's the Harbaugh's podcast, we almost lost a member today. Thankfully, he stuck around.
He came back.
Yeah, we got him back in the boat. But I've got to give special appreciation to Brent Copelitz and his family down in New Orleans. So anybody talk to you this weekend about the podcast?
Well, probably my most avid listener is Riley Crane.
Great.
And we have a story. Riley and I have a story from a couple of years back, and he's been trying to get me, you know, to tell that story. And I've been a little reluctant. So as Riley continues to listen and keeps prodding me on, that story is coming, Riley. It's coming, my friend.
So if you listen this week, Riley, you'll be inching towards the story.
We're moving towards the story.
That is exciting. I'm looking forward to it because I don't know that I know it. But that'll do it for us. Want to thank John Jantz for coming on with us. Want to thank Podcast One for helping us with the podcast. As always, Chris Donovan doing a great job post-production. And Ira Weintraub here with us every Monday, it seems. And sometimes even on other days when we got to get it done. Want to thank the show's sponsor, TrueCar, and Hims. Go to 4hims.com/attack for your Hims products. And I've got my gummies, so I'm all set. But appreciate all the engagement and interaction on Apple Podcasts, evaluating, ranking, reviewing our podcast, and then also getting in touch with us on Twitter at JTE Rogan or at AED Podcast. You can always use the hashtag JackTalk. So that's it. Another episode in the can. Look forward to talking to you guys next week. Until then, attack each day with enthusiasm unknown to mankind.
Thank you for listening to Attack Each Day, the Harbaugh's podcast, here on Podcast One. Don't forget to subscribe at podcastone.com, the Podcast One app, or Apple Podcasts.
Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit spectrum.com/bigdeal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.